Off the Ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
News Talk 106 to 108.
Welcome back. So we'll be continuing with our football talk after 9 o'clock. We'll have Mark Lawrenson on to talk about events in Manchester last night, Liverpool against Manchester City, of course. So Laura will join us just after 9 o'clock, and we'll be keeping a very close eye on events at Madrid. But we're ready to go with Davey Russell, who is on the line, and we've got Aintree on the horizon. And Davey, first of all, congratulations for Cheltenham. I guess you go in there hoping things go well, and then suddenly things go very well.
Yeah, no, it was a great few days, thanks. So, things clicked into place, and Delta Walk was very good in the handicap, and then obviously Belka the Floor was good, and then the storyteller just crowned off of a wonderful day, and I suppose we had presenting Percy then the day before, so that's kind of made it a marvellous few days.
Yeah, I guess you're pinching yourself at times like that. I know you've had huge success across your career, and you've had a winner at Cheltenham, one winner every year, I think, since 06, which is a fairly remarkable record in and of itself. But you must be kind of going home after the better days there thinking, wow, I don't know why this is happening or why it's all clicking into gear, but it's fairly magic all the same. Or what were your thoughts?
Sure, I suppose we still had another day's race and to go on Friday, so we had to get that out of the way, but... And we don't get much time to dwell on it either, because you arrive home and we Limerick the next day, and you know, the bandwagon kind of rolls on fairly fast. But Cheltenham is a huge part of any jockey's career or season, and there's a lot of pressure building up to it, and you know, stables need to perform, and horses need to perform, and owners need the horses to perform at the top level. And you know, it's very pleasing when all them things click, and I'm just lucky. You know, I'd two winners for Gordon Elliott and one for Henry de Bromhead and one for Pat Kelly, and you know, they're all very good professional outfits. So my job has made an awful lot easier coming out of there, you know.
You mentioned pressure there, Davey, something that you hear the jockeys speaking about in the lead up to Cheltenham, certainly in relation to lead up to Aintree. It is a bit more relaxed going into the Aintree Festival. So how do you deal with that pressure when you're actually going into the festival?
I suppose, look, it's all what you put on yourself. I don't really feel it too much for myself, to be honest. It's more kind of the anticipation, and it's like waiting for Christmas morning, really. That's kind of the biggest part of it. The riding part of it is not a problem. The actual taking part in it is fine. That sorts itself out. It's just trying to control everything on the build-up to it, really. I like to get involved in this, to be honest. I like to get involved in all the hype and the previews and things. I enjoy it. Relaxes it for me maybe a little bit. The more I talk about it and the more information I can get into myself, I enjoy it. I don't take it too seriously, you know. It's very betting orientated too, you know. It's a lot to do with people backing horses.
It's probably more pressure, isn't it, when people are telling you what they've backed and what they're going to be on?
Yeah, I suppose being a Corkman now, when it's not my own money, I'm not too worried. that doesn't really bother me. The one thing that would kind of bother me is kind of horses that are underpriced, going into a festival, if you know what I mean, when you're riding a horse that's kind of a shorter price and people are fancying him, and maybe his price wouldn't relate to his chance, if you know what I mean. You know, just, you know, there was a couple there this year that were very, very short and fancied by other people rather than us, you know, or rather than their actual chance, if you know what I mean. It was just people were putting two and two together and getting 10, you know.
That's
something that can be a bit worrying at the time.
Yeah, I've no doubt. And do you feel there's too much talk of betting when it comes to racing? Because I don't watch it all the time, and I'll dip in at the big moments like Cheltenham, of course, and I'll be watching this weekend. But I must say I'm watching it a lot of the time, or watching the coverage, and I find the incessant talk about betting boring, actually. There's great characters in the sport. There's different attributes of horses. There's different methods that trainers would use. I just find there's a lack of analysis, actually, in a lot of the talk about racing, and it's all to just make space for talk of betting and betting and more betting.
I agree 100%. I couldn't agree any more about it. I actually don't like it myself. I personally really enjoy horses. You see, And then it gets a little bit boring. I can be a little bit boring because I speak about their pedigrees and their background. And, you know, sometimes we treat horses like humans, as in they're the people that look after them are very, very close to these horses. And I personally have no interest in betting. I don't regard it as it has any bearing on anything to do with racing. Only for some reason in the past maybe 10 or 12 years it is all betting. It's all down to the betting ring. What do they think down there? And really, like, they don't know. You know, they don't know. They haven't a clue whether that horse ate up in the morning or had a good or a bad piece of work. So then it creates rumours start to go around and things. And I think it's all, I don't know what it is about horse racing and betting, but it takes a little bit away from what is the most outstanding sport for me personally. I'm from the ground roots up. We breed a lot of horses. I've grown up around breeding horses. But it kind of gets back to, you know, you're always trying to beat the bookies. Yeah. And I've never seen a bookie cycling a bike, you know. So that is going to be a very difficult thing to do. And the bookies are creating their own free advertisement the whole time, and it's generated by the televisions. And me personally, I would much rather get down that they do analyse things a little bit better. Like, there's any amount of things that you can speak about other than betting. And I think they do emphasise an awful lot, definitely too much on betting.
Yeah, I would tend to agree. Anytime I come away from watching for, you know, 4 or 5 days of a festival, or
you don't learn anything.
No, I would learn. You know, you've brilliant people there. You know, AP McCoy on the coverage and stuff, who's great, and he'd be on the show from time to time.
I must say, I agree. Yeah. I think he adds another dimension.
He does. But too often you wouldn't learn things about the craft of what a jockey is doing in a given race. Like, we're watching Real Madrid here against Juventus, and we're going to talk about the game afterwards.
That's right. And we're going to
talk about how they performed. And touches and technique. And, you know, it's very rare I watch racing and you see a kind of, you know, almost a replay, and it's, well, hold it here and zoom in here and look what he's doing with his legs here, and that's crucial. That just doesn't seem to be the culture. It's on to the next race. I didn't mean to go this far down the tangent, but it's come up kind of naturally.
I agree. And I tell you, for just one example of that was that Sam Twiston Davis in the Queen Mother Champion Chase, they have these parades for these championship races. Sam Twiston Davis took it upon himself that in the interest of the horse, of his chance in the race, that he didn't parade. Now, he did try to parade, okay? So he did take part in the parade, but he broke the parade because the horse was getting very uptight and he was getting excited and he was kicking railings and things. And he took it upon himself to break the parade and canter to start for the horse's best chance, if you know, in the race. And they fined him £1,000 for doing that. But for me, there was no emphasis on why did he do it. Like, he didn't do it just for the crack, you know. He put thought into that. It was a decision for tactics for him to do that. He got off the fine. He appealed it and he got off it, and that's great, you know, and that's fine. But the reason, the problem is, the thing I don't understand is, why didn't they go into why Sam done it and the reasoning behind it to explain to people that read the paper next day, Sam Thomas got fined €1,000 pounds for breaking the parade. Why did he do that? But I agree 100% why a rider would pull off the inside or go the inside or walk a track or, I don't know. I agree with you. I have no interest in betting as such now. And they have their purpose in the game, and they're very good in certain ways. But I think on coverage, on a day's racing, it could be changed. It should be changed.
And look, you know, the betting industry supports a lot of sport. This show is sponsored by Boyle Sports, so I'm not going to be a hypocrite here.
And they put up marvellous prize money for our biggest race of the year in the Grand National, and it's very much appreciated. But we're not taking away from betting. We're just saying the coverage of a race meeting is very much orientated around betting, which is not ideal for a sport.
Because funny enough, the standout moment for me, and I don't want to kind of patronise it in any way, maybe describing it as a standout moment isn't right, but the most human, or the moment that impacted me the most, was when you were interviewed after one of the wins, and I hadn't realised your mother had passed away recently, and you were obviously thinking of her, and it was very emotional. And, you know, of anything across the 4 days, it was that moment that you shared with people and the sadness you felt and a mixture of everything. I mean, that was a really powerful thing.
Yeah, look, you know, people, obviously, you know, we're all normal human beings, you know, really at the end of the day. And we had a tough time at Mam, and she was a brilliant woman. Like, you know, she never done anything, only just tried her damnedest for us. And obviously people in the game knew that she had passed away, and she put up a big fight for a number of years. And
right.
She unfortunately passed away the week beforehand, and, you know, I had taken a decision that if she was going to hang on, I wasn't going to go to Cheltenham.
Right.
And, you know, it was just I hadn't said it to anybody. You know, I just had in my own head, I just decided that was it. Cheltenham, nothing was bigger than what I had than my family, you know. And she passed away, and they just asked me, and you know, your mother is your mother, and she was the most outstanding person to us, along with my dad and my brothers and sisters, you know. So we have a brilliant, we have a fantastic family. I have a fantastic family. I'm sure a lot of people do, but she was just an extraordinary woman for me. And yeah, it was just, you know, you feel these things that, you know, is there someone, are you getting help from somewhere? And without being too soft or cheesy about it, you know, you just kind of think at moments like that, you think maybe, you know.
Yeah, I'm sure.
You know, it's just, I don't know what it is, but I'm sure I definitely need somebody helping her.
And are you religious?
No, we were brought up religiously, and we went to Mass, and, you know, I've great respect for the community around the church. But as regards going to Mass every Sunday, actually, would you believe now, and my with marvellous priest at Mam's funeral, and he spoke in a way that he kind of brought me back, that I would like to start going back to Mass.
Yeah.
Just the way he spoke, generally, he too said, you know, you don't have to go to Mass every day of the week. We don't want you every day of the week. He said, you know, if we turn up once every fortnight, he said, that'll do me. And, you know, to something like that, I would get back into it. You know what I mean? But it was nice. It was just something that, I'm not a usually religious person, yeah. But I do have some beliefs, yeah.
Not to play pop psychologist or anything here, but it must be incredibly difficult to go from your mother's funeral fairly quickly into Cheltenham. I mean, do you almost put mourning on hold? Like they say, it's really important to grieve for a loss like that. Do you have to put all that on hold, or like is it almost hit you more so since Cheltenham, or what's that been like?
We had time. We had time, and it's still not, you know, we're nowhere way over it, and my dad is still very much, you know, he's very much upset, and that upsets all of us. And there's little things along the way, and I like going to the grave to just say hello to her, and but I don't know if this is going to break out again, but I kind of the type of person that, you know, there's inside of our industry, or of my job, or whatever you'd call it, and then there's outside of it. So
yeah.
I have a good close net of people around me here, and my wife and the kids, and my brothers and sisters and brother-in-law and everything. So, you know, when I go racing, I go racing, and that stays there, and when I come home, I come home. Mm. You know, that's the way I tried to. I wasn't always like that. I used to take things home with me. You just get upset about things, but not anymore. No, not when you walk in the door and you see three or four kids, you know, looking in the face and saying, telling you you're great. It doesn't really matter what you've done. Or,
yeah.
You know, so when you mature, and luckily I have a beautiful family around me.
Because I remember seeing a documentary, great documentary, in you a while back, and it was very clear you took stuff home, and you were so driven and desperate to be champion jockey, whatever year that was made for the first time, and it was
like you
weren't happy. I would say, looking in the outside, you weren't unhappy, but it was just all encompassing and all around you. And I'd never met you, and I kind of loved the drive, like it was Roy Keane-esque, and I thought, God, this guy is fascinating and brilliant, but like he'll burn himself out.
Yeah, and you know, I didn't like myself back then. Not as in I didn't wake up in the morning and say I hated myself. I just didn't like what I was. and you know,
how would you describe what you were then?
It was probably a way past the time of language, but I was a bit of an I was an asshole. Like, but it was horse racing and nothing else. Like, I mean, nothing else mattered. Money didn't matter. Nothing else mattered.
Yeah.
Only just winners, 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 winners. I didn't care how I got them. I didn't care where they came from. I just wanted winners. I didn't want, and anybody that said anything or done anything in to get in my way, they were wrong, and that was it. And you know, I just did not have anything else in my life. I didn't want anything else in my life.
Was that your family, Davey, that changed that, having children and things like that, or was it something else that changed your mentality?
I tell you, I suppose, you know, I lost my job whatever year it was, 13 or something, and I think kind of now, and it wasn't said or anything, but I think the reason I lost my job was because of my attitude.
Yeah, this was 2014 when Michael O'Leary brought you in for a cup of tea and told you, by the way, you're gone from Jiggins 10 as our main rider.
Yeah. To be honest, people were patting me in the back for the way I reacted, and really the reason I reacted because I kind of agreed with him.
Right.
He didn't say it, you know. He didn't tell me that's the reason. He just said, basically, we're moving on, and that's great. Thank you very much.
Mm.
And when he said it, I kind of realised that the reason. Well, that's the only reason I've come up with.
But it's a fair guess, because you've still. Your talent hasn't, dwindled. You're leading jockey at Cheltenham. So, were you falling out with people and like just difficult to be around when it wasn't going your way?
I'd follow with my left hand. But I'd get back. I couldn't understand why they wouldn't have been the same person to me 10 minutes later.
Yeah,
I mean? I'd have an argument with someone at 2 o'clock, and at 2:05, I'd want to go to the pub with them,
right,
or something. Do you know? But
like, they'd be still a bit sore, and you'd be saying, "What's wrong with you?"
Yeah, but I wouldn't really be too bothered about what they'd be thinking, really. You know, I was very, very selfish. I was very selfish.
Did you know that was coming, Dave, when you got that phone call to go and see Michael?
Yeah.
Did you know it was coming?
Well, I rode a winner from that day.
Yeah.
I rode a winner from that day, and not beating the world. No.
And so the process of softening up and I guess maturing and some perspective, did that happen quickly or is it slow? Or
It had to happen quickly, because, you know, the likes of the owners are in the game to enjoy it, and I suppose, you know, you have to be. I just wasn't. I don't know. No, I'm only guessing, really. But I wasn't really enjoying it that well myself.
How could
honest.
You be?
Yeah. I was coming home there. It didn't really matter what the race was worth as long as it won. You know, and if it didn't win, then geez, I used to be a fierce upset with myself. Linger for a couple of days. Now, you know, I just try my best. You know, I try my hardest. I don't put too much pressure on it. And that also comes down to the likes of Gordon Elliott and maybe the likes of Charles Burns and Henry DeBarnett and different people that I write for. Gordon is very much the next day. Now, look, today is the day with a lot of horses. So you have to be at your best, and I understand that, and I know that, and I don't ever let that slip. I don't underprepare in any. I didn't change that part of it, but what I did change was that okay, there may be another day that for either for me to make up for my mistake or if it just wasn't good enough, maybe to accept we just weren't good enough in the day. It was very hard for me to accept that I wasn't good enough on the day that I would say that's it now, that opportunity gone.
Yeah.
You know, whereas
you'd
now...
relive it.
And I have backing of the likes of Gordon and different trainers. And they're very much, they like to see out the season. And I like to see out the season. And to be honest, I'm not saying I'm brilliant or anything, but I make less mistakes now than I did when I was putting myself under that sort of scrutiny.
Right. Listen, we have gone way over time. The whole point to have you on was to ask you about Tiger Roll, which I now don't have any time to do. So as interviewers, we've completely failed in the point, but I think it was a really interesting chat. So we'll say the very best of luck at the weekend in the Grand National. You're going on Tiger Roll. We hope you go well. I know you've had success there in the past. And do you know what? There's loads of people texting in saying they're loving listening to you. So we'll get in touch and you can pick a day an evening and come in and sit in studio for half an hour, 45 minutes, and we'll have a good chat.
Yeah. I'd love to, yeah.
Okay, spot on. Davey Russell, thanks a million.
Thanks. Off the Ball.
Find us on Twitter at Off the Ball.
News Talk 106 to 108.